Why don't we go ahead and get started? I've got 5 minutes after the hour, or 4 minutes. Why don't we go ahead and get started, if that's all right? So we'll call this meeting to order. First, if I could just ask, we do have a couple of new faces tonight. We have Commissioner Singh, a new commissioner, as well as Leslie. So if I could just ask, welcome everyone. If I could just ask our commissioners just to keep their cameras on, just for now, at least while we do introductions, I'd appreciate it, just to give our new folks a warm welcome. Thank you. Great. So I'm going to go ahead and do the roll call right now. Vice Chair Mirfies, I see you here. I think it looks like you're on mute, but I see you here.
Yeah.
Okay. Commissioner Ma, do not see him here yet. Commissioner Mansfield.
Here.
All right. Commissioner Pham.
Here.
Okay. Commissioner Singh.
Here.
And Commissioner Mercer is excused this evening. All right. So as I mentioned, we have a couple of new faces tonight. We have Leslie, as well as our newest commissioner, Commissioner Singh. So I was thinking maybe we could just take a quick moment for everyone here to introduce ourselves, maybe talk a little bit about how long we've been on the commission, and then also perhaps sort of what drew each of us to the commission. Very, very brief. I'm happy to kick it off. Hi, my name is Ben Piper. I've been on the commission. I had to go look. I've been on since 2018. So I'm just wrapping up my first term. I'm coming now into my third funding cycle. Was really drawn to I got to know about the commission through Bellevue Essentials. So I was in Bellevue Essentials, I think, in 2015. Learned a lot about, obviously, the way that the city of Bellevue government works, and was very interested in the Human Services Commission. So when the vacancy came up, I applied twice, actually. I've always had a lot of interest in child welfare issues, child advocacy, and so I just thought that being on the commission would also be another opportunity to really kind of bring that experience and passion at a very local level here in my community. So why don't I toss it to Samira? Do you want to give a quick intro?
Yeah, absolutely. This is Samira Amistis, and I think I joined the commission the same time that Ben did. So I think it's about 4 years now. Mm-hmm. So I knew about the commission work when I was the executive of a nonprofit and would come to before the commission, Bellevue Commission, to answer questions regarding the funding requests. And I knew the due diligence that they gave and the thought that they gave to each application. And it was a, you know, there was a vacancy, and I was very honored to apply and be accepted as a commissioner. So that's my story in terms of why I was intrigued by the commissioner's work. Thank you.
Thank you. Ted, do you want to go ahead?
Sure. I can't remember how many years I've been on the commission in my first term, so at least since before the pandemic. I too went through Bellevue Essentials, knew about the commission before that, however, have been involved in community organizations most of my life with my mom growing up. I'm also interested in child advocacy. I've been a foster parent and adoptive parent, and just always looking for ways to give back. So that's my.
Thank you. Angela?
So I'm a newbie. This is my first term, and I'm just a couple of months in. I work for the City of Bellevue in the Youth Link program. I am really into youth voice, and also just dealing with food insecurity here in our surrounding areas. And I love everything about Bellevue, and anything that I can do to help make it the best place for everyone is kind of my MO. So welcome.
Christy, do you want to say a quick introduction to, I assume Leslie knows you, but maybe Jimmy, maybe you know Jimmy, but maybe an intro?
I did meet him this afternoon.
This afternoon, that's right.
So I'm Christy Sangland, and I'm the Human Services Planner, and I've been with City of Bellevue for 4.5 years.
Great. Thanks. And Tony?
Yeah, welcome, Commissioner Singh. I got to meet Commissioner Singh in his interview process. We're so glad you're here. But Tony Esparza, and I'm an assistant director in the Parks and Community Services Department, which is where Human Services is housed in the city of Bellevue. Great.
And welcome to both Leslie Miller and Commissioner Singh. Commissioner Singh, do you want to say a quick intro or hello?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. So I am also a Bellevue Essentials graduate. I did in 2017, and I know the process, how the city works. I'm glad I did that. And being a Norwood Bellevue resident for 15 years, I've been a part of the Norwood Village Association and Woodridge. So organizing various events, and in 2014, I was amazed, shocked basically to see the homeless people in such a rich city. And somebody told me about the shelter where we can do the service. And for last 6 years, every Sunday, we were serving at Indian vegetarian food at homeless shelter at CFH. And slowly, I started knowing the city and how it functions and various organizations. And I'm glad to be the part of it. I have two young kids. One go to Woodridge Elementary and fourth grader, and my elder son goes to Chinook. He's an eighth grader. And it's definitely a world-class city and diverse, and I'm glad to be the part of this city and this organization and whatever I can serve.
Welcome. We're so honored to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Leslie, do you want to say a quick introduction to the commission?
Sure. Leslie Miller. I met a couple of you in Joint Human Services Commission meetings in the past, so I've spent the last 8 years at the City of Kirkland leading the Human Services Program there. And before that, I worked for the Sophia Way, which all of you, Commissioner Singh, if you're not familiar, you will be soon, the women's program for women experiencing homelessness. I just am really excited to be here at Bellevue and to get a chance to serve this community. I take public service very seriously and find it a great honor. And so I'm really looking forward to working with all of you to serve our community and the folks who are furthest from justice. So thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much and welcome.
Thank you.
Look forward to working with you. Great. Next on the agenda, it looks like we have two sets of minutes to approve tonight. We have March 1st and March 15th. So I need a motion to approve the minutes from March 1st, 2022. Is there a motion to
approve? I'm moved.
Okay, is there a second?
Commissioner Fan, second.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor of approving the March 1st, 2022 minutes as written, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. March 1st, 2022 minutes are approved. We'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes from March 15th, 2022.
This is Samira Amise, so moved.
Okay. Is there a second?
Commissioner Fan, second.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor of approving the March 15th, 2022 minutes, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Hearing none opposed, the motion carries and the minutes are approved. Okay, the next agenda item is written communications. The only communication received since the last meeting was a letter from HopeLink. And Christy, it sounds like you'll be forwarding that to the commission this week. Fantastic. Are there any staff reports? Okay. Any commissioner reports?
The only thing that I would just add, and I don't know if this is the right place to put it, is just to remind everyone that we do have an original, additional opportunity this week. We have our first part of the equity training this Thursday from 6:30 to 7:30. So just a reminder of that, and that we won't have a regular commission meeting on the 19th because we'll be taking part in a second training that we will all be dispersed. And so you'll just see And so the next time we meet again will be that first, all together, will be that first meeting in May.
Right, May 3rd.
And that we may, we're waiting for guidance, but we, that may be our first opportunity to gather together in person. So
exciting stuff. Yeah, right. We won't know what to do with ourselves.
Exactly.
I'm really excited about that, and that I don't have to wait a long time to be greet you all and see you all in person. And I just think it's a great timing as we move into the funding process to get that in-person time. So really excited about that.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, everyone. Next is information for the commission. So we have three items tonight. The first item, I'll turn over to Christy. She's going to be presenting an analysis of the Human Services Funding Awards to improve equity in funding.
Okay, can everybody see my screen now that I've unmuted myself? Okay, perfect. So, tonight, I'll be providing an overview of the analysis of the Human Services Funding Awards for improved equity in funding. The data was compiled in response to a request to staff from a collaborative meeting that we had with some BIPOC buy-in for agencies. In addition to the information they requested, we determined that it was necessary to provide data for both our 21-22 Human Services Fund biannual cycle funding, as well as all City of Bellevue Human Services funding in 2020 and 2021, which includes all of our extra funding that we received, the CARES funding, the CDBG, CDBG-CV, the 1590 or Behavioral Health and Housing and Services, and the ARPA funding. Sorry, it's not letting me. There we go. So tonight I'll provide an overview of the analysis of the different funding years. And during this presentation, I'll be talking about the funding for broke out by analyzing it by from BIPOC, buy-in for agencies, funding for new agencies, and then other efforts related to improving equity in funding. So before we get started, I just wanted to review a couple of terms that I'll be using throughout the presentation tonight. So BIPOC is an abbreviation for Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. POC, or People of Color, is a widely used as an umbrella term for all people of color. BIPOC recognizes that Black and Indigenous people are severely impacted by systematic racial injustice. And then the other term I'll be using is BIPOC buy-in for agencies. And these are agencies that were created by, are led by, and staffed by BIPOC individuals and focus on serving the BIPOC community. BIPOC buy-in for agencies provide culturally and linguistically specific services. Between 2020 and 2021, the City of Bellevue allocated over $14 million in pandemic funding, as well as 1590 funding, in addition to the ongoing human services funding that is distributed on our biannual basis. During the pandemic, our City Council emphasized to the Human Services Commission to both use a wide base, or to include both a wide base of agencies and agencies that provide culturally specific services in their funding recommendations. So in this slide, it shows the comparison between the requested amount versus the amount awarded for all City of Bellevue Human Services funds in 2020 and 2021. As you know, we had significant amount of pandemic funding as well as the 1590 funding in 2021. This chart compares the funding for, as you can see on the left-hand slide, the BIPOC buy-in for agencies compared to all other agencies. And it is broke out by funding for all other agencies that include shelters and all agencies that exclude shelters. Because as you know, the Bellevue City Council has prioritized funding for our shelters. Therefore, a significant portion of the City of Bellevue Human Services funding is dedicated to shelters. There was a significant increase in both the amount of funding to BIPOC, BIM4 agencies, as well as an increase in the percentage of requested funds being funded. There was an increase in funding in 2021, which allowed for more funding requests to be fulfilled either fully or partially. In addition, some of the funds were either allocated without an RFP, determined by either staffing recommendations or commission recommendations. And then plus there were ARPA funding that the commission was able to meet the funding request of all of the agencies, leaving some remaining fundings to be allocated as the agencies spend down their awarded amounts. So I'm not going to go through all of these numbers, but if anybody would like a copy of these to look into them further, I'm more than happy to share this with you. So this chart shows only the 2021 human services funding cycle. So as you can see, the chart shows the amount similar to the last slide for the BIPOC, BIM4 agencies, and then all other agencies funded, both including and excluding shelter. Looking at these numbers for the BIPOC, BIM4, this is our typical general fund that we have every other year, 34% of the BIPOC BIM4 agency requests were awarded funding, compared to if you calculate it for all other agencies that include shelter and all agencies that exclude shelter, 72% of all of those agencies that were awarded, 72% of the requested amount was awarded to those agencies. So you can see there was a pretty big discrepancy with 34 for BIPOC, BIM4 versus the 72. This slide looks at it, going back to kind of that first slide that I had with lots of different numbers on it. This looks at it both the 2021-2022 human services funding that last slide that I had with all human services. So if you look at it just for the BIPOC BIM4, in our typical funding cycle for 21-22, 34% of the BIPOC BIM4 agencies' requests were awarded funding, versus looking at all funding for 2021, 81% of the requests were actually funded. And then both other agencies, including shelter and other agencies excluding shelter, there wasn't as big of a difference between the two funding amounts. And so you can see by looking at this that our commission did follow the council's encouragement to include both a wide variety of agencies, but also really looking at providing culturally specific services with our fundings. So here is the BIPOC BIM4 agencies that applied for any human services funding in 2020 is in the left-hand column and 2021 is in the right-hand column. We highlighted all of the agencies that received funding. You can see in the right-hand column, there are some agencies that have one single asterisk, and those agencies did not meet City of Bellevue's requirements at the time of application. The requirements have since been reviewed and have been adjusted so that agencies are now eligible, or maybe now eligible for future funding. And I also just want to note that, as you can see next to Families of Color Seattle, there's two asterisks, that was a really hard word to say, and that is because they did not receive funding in 2021, but they did receive funding in 2022. So in 2020, looking at the left-hand column, 9 out of 10 agencies, or 90%, of the BIPOC Biinfor agencies that applied for funding were awarded funding. In 2021, 10 out of the 17, or 59%, BIPOC Biinfor agencies that applied for funding were awarded funding. However, three of those agencies did not meet City of Bellevue's financial requirements. Of the eligible agencies, so of the 14 that were actually met our requirements, 10 out of 14 were that applied for funding were awarded funding, and that's 71%. This chart looks at the BIPOC Biinfor agencies that applied in our 21-22 City of Bellevue Human Services Fund, or as we call our general fund. Again, highlighted agencies are the ones that we funded, and the ones with asterisks did not meet our funding requirements. 10 out of the 15 in this chart of the BIPOC Biinfor agencies that applied for 21-22 human services funding were awarded funding. And if you only include the agencies that were eligible, 10 out of the 12, or 83% of the BIPOC Biinfor agencies that applied for funding were awarded funding. So BIPOC Biinfor funded agencies, in 2020, 13%, or 11 out of the 83 programs funded are BIPOC Biinfor programs, and these included four new programs. This included CISC's Russian Senior Day Program. The Indian American Community Services had three programs that were funded for the first time: their behavioral health, their cultural navigator, and their rental assistance. And then in 2021, this 22%, or 20 out of 91 programs were funded were BIPOC Biinfor programs. And so these included seven new programs. The For Tomorrow had three programs. It was their behavioral health program, their Latinx cultural navigator, and their rent mortgage assistance program. The Cultural Mexicano, or Central Cultural Mexicano, had rental mortgage assistance. The International Community Health Services had behavioral health. And MAPS MCRC had two programs, their behavioral health program and their information referrals and resources. And just to specify, this is really looking at programs versus the other was looking at overall agencies. I know I'm saying a lot of numbers, so please, if people have questions, ask them, so that I'm sure if you have a question, somebody else does as well. And then looking at just the programs that applied for 20, or that it received funding in 2021-22 City of Bellevue Human Services funding cycle, 13 of the 82 programs that we funded, or 16%, were BIPOC Biinfor. And of those, the three new programs were For Tomorrow had their Latinx cultural navigator, Families of Color Seattle had their parenting group for families of color. And like I mentioned earlier, that was actually not funded until the 2022. And then MAPS MCRC had their information referrals and resources. So this slide shows the data for agencies funded for the first time. And so of all human services grantees in 2020.
Christy, I think you're on the wrong slide.
I am. Thank you.
There we go. Uh-huh.
Thank you. I just clicked one. I was like, that number is not the same that's on my notes. With a difference of a 7 and a 50, so it was a pretty big difference. agencies that were funded for the first time. So in 2020, 7%, or 3 out of the 44 agencies that we've funded, were funded for the first time, and that includes Community Homes, Bellevue LifeSpring, and MAPS MCRC. And then in 2021, 4% of all agencies, or 2 out of 49, received funding for the first time in 2021. And those two agencies were For Tomorrow and Central Cultural Mexicano. Looking at just our 21-22 human services funding cycle grantees that were funded for the first time, 4% of all agencies, or 2 out of 48 agencies in the that funding cycle received funding for the first time, and that included For Tomorrow and Families of Color. And so as you can see, it's like looking at the data in a lot of different ways. And so sometimes it feels a little bit repetitive, but it is all different comparisons. We wanted to make sure that there was lots of ways to look at it. And then this slide covers funding for agencies that were either East Side born or East Side based agencies. So in 2020, 50% or 22 out of 44 agencies that received human services funding were East Side born or East Side based. And in 2021, 51% or 25 out of 29 agencies that received human services funding were East Side born or East Side based. If we looked at just the agencies that were funded from our general fund funding cycle in 21-22, 49% or 24 out of 49 agencies that received funding were East Side born or East Side based. So these are the other efforts that we made over the last few years to achieve greater equity for funding. So first, I had mentioned how there were some agencies that were not eligible based on our financial requirements. So Bellevue revised our eligibility for financial documents that are required for agencies applying for human services funding. The revised guidelines only identify requirements that are legally mandated for agencies, and this revision removed barriers for some agencies that may have experienced barriers in the past. We also, agencies are no longer required to be registered at the state as a charitable organization or a federal 501c3 to be eligible for funding. The technical assistance was offered to all applicants through Community Rise for our 21-22 human services funding application process and also our behavioral health and housing related or 1590 application process. Technical assistance is also being offered for the 23-24 human service funding application process that we're in the middle of right now. Bellevue is accepting funding applications and quarterly reports in languages other than English. And Bellevue is also funding a capacity building initiative through Community Rise that will begin in June of 2022. This initiative will focus on supporting small or emerging and mid-sized nonprofit organizations that provide human services to immigrants, refugees, communities of color, low-income and marginalized communities residing in East Side cities with training and mentoring to further the organization's development. And then also all human services commissioners that are reviewing applications will receive the equity training, which Leslie mentioned at the beginning of the beginning of the meeting. So now I would just like to open it of how would commissioners maintain this progress that we've made in funding for the BIPOC BIM4 agencies? And I'll go ahead and stop sharing my screen. I could see everybody's beautiful faces.
I'm sorry, Christy, what was your question?
Just how will the commission maintain the progress in funding to BIPOC BIM4 agencies?
Do any commissioners want to open it up with some comments about any thoughts or ideas on how we maintain this? I mean, I guess one thing that I'll throw out there, certainly, you know, the equity training that we have coming up is one, I think, important sort of reminder and refresh for all of us. I think it was something, you know, in the last funding cycle that we as a commission, I think, really did take to heart. And I think, you know, again, there were a lot of, as is always the case, right, when there's more demand than supply, these are challenging discussions to have, but I think it's always important for us to look at these through that lens. So I think I guess my feeling is just making sure that we are you know, always reminding ourselves as we're having these, you know, conversations that are going to be coming up in the next few months to think back to tonight and to the training that we're going to, you know, be having in the next weeks and a couple of weeks, I guess. Any other thoughts or observations?
Well, I think for me, you know, is not just maintaining it, but really aiming to increase it. And that all depends on the funding, right? So since this is one of the priorities of the council, I'm hoping that they will find some additional funding for our smaller ethnic-led agencies, because I know that we struggle in terms of the threshold for funding. Like, is $5,000, you know, what are they going to do with $5,000 or even $10,000? So something that is meaningful, I think that's the lens I'm looking at it, in terms of how do we not only maintain it, but strive to increase it at a meaningful level, so at least they can deliver substantive services to their participants. Having said that, I also realize that many of our communities of color also go to non-BIPOC-led agencies, right, for services. I think looking at it holistically in terms of making sure that we support the smaller ethnic organizations, but at the same time, keeping in mind that nobody can do this work alone, and that the larger agencies have a lot of offerings that the smaller agencies don't, and they do serve communities of color, perhaps not so much in terms of cultural sensitivity or linguistically appropriate, but to the extent possible, they serve, and that's why we fund them. So, thank you.
Very important point. Thank you. Any other discussion comments from the commission?
I was going to actually say kind of something what Samara said, Commissioner Samara said, about that the other agencies do serve families of color and individuals of color too. But I was wondering, is that something that you have access to, like you see, so if, you know, Hope Link asks for a grant, right, funding, and they can give you a breakdown of the individuals that come and use their resources?
Yes.
We do typically get, oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, Christy, you're the expert on this. I was going to just say that we do get this, but please go into more detail, Christy, in terms of, it's been 2 years for me.
We do get demographic information from the
okay.
So we can.
Okay, so that's good. That's a good point too, but also maintaining, yeah, exactly what she said, maintaining and also trying to increase whatever we can to these agencies that help the BIPOC community.
I have a question, and I don't mean to take a lot of time, but at the beginning of your presentation, you said there is an acknowledgement that that the Black and Indigenous people have been impacted by, I believe, institutional racism or something. I was just curious, why not the brown people?
So it is was the definition for the BIPOC, and part of it is that, so is the BIPOC is Black Indigenous, and so BIPOC just recognizes that Black and Indigenous people are severely impacted.
Yeah, but it also says people of color. I mean, that's what BIPOC is. So I'm just curious, why not people of color? Why not brown people?
Yeah. So can I pipe in to give a little bit more information about that, Christy? Is that all right?
Yeah.
So you're right that, yes, so POC, people of color, is often used, and that is kind of an umbrella term. BIPOC came to be used because, and I want to be very careful that people of color who have these conversations are very clear to say we don't want to be in the Olympics of oppression, one being more oppressed than the other, but we do want to recognize in the history of the nation that there are different experiences, anti-Black racism, the history of enslavement, and then indigenous experience of genocide and such, oftentimes those experiences become invisible. And so this is a way for communities of color, whether Asian or Latinx, have all, you know, kind of came together and said, we recognize that there's difference. And so we're using BIPOC. It's not utilized by everyone, but it is a term that you're seeing more often. And not, and with all of these issues, they're very complex, and but just wanted to add that in. Is that helpful, Samara?
Well, I'm quite familiar with the origin of BIPOC and people of color. What I'm not understanding is that the Chinese Americans have also faced oppression. If you look at the history of the United States, so have the Japanese American, so have the Sikhs, so have the Middle Eastern, so have the people who come from global South, right? So I think if we just focus on Black, which here I believe we mean African American, and the Native Americans, then I think we are missing the boat in terms of the oppression that other groups face. And that's what the general term of the BIPOC is. So I acknowledge that people of color are included in the systems that, you know, negatively impact their livelihood and their ability to garnish wealth and thrive. So I'm just struggle with that in terms of why is that in this presentation was just focused on Black and Indigenous.
Commissioner Ramirez, I think I understand where the confusion is coming from. And I can see the way that it was worded was a bit confusing. I think the definition was just to explain why it's BIPOC instead of just saying POC, instead of just saying people of color, why the terminology BIPOC is used, why is Black and Indigenous communities called out in front of people of color. And so please know, by all means, it is not our intention as staff to have implied that any person of color has not experienced injustice and oppression in our communities. We completely understand and acknowledge that. We were trying to explain the definition of the term and identify why Black and Indigenous is called out separate. But perhaps we didn't quite get our wording right on that. Does that help?
Well, I think it's implied, right? So I think, again, it goes back to our quest for to make sure that we are inclusive.
Yes.
You know, we used to call people of color, and now somebody came up with this definition of Black, Indigenous, people of color. So it's sub de jure. Every time we come up with something to describe a group of people who are not white and have, you know, systemically been left out of the equation of, you know, thriving in the United States. I think if we don't call them out and we don't say people of color, then I think we are missing the point in terms of making sure that we are inclusive and we also acknowledge how they're left behind. Look at the plight of our the people who come from Global South and from Mexico and El Salvador and so on and so forth. And you know, I don't have to tell you about the Japanese American and the Chinese American and the Sikh community experience. So I think it's just honoring to say that we also include people of color and we acknowledge how they are impacted.
Right. And the POC, I hope, does that. So it's not taking people away. It's, yeah, calling out. Well, we will huddle back and talk about how we can utilize that term and support the commission better. Thanks, Samara.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Samara. I agree with Samara, and it's first meeting. I agree that it should be journal for everyone.
Okay. Thank you. If there's no other comments or discussion, thank you, Christy.
Wait, I have a question. I'm just kind of confused as to like what are we agreeing on? Because I'm just like, I'm just a little confused as to what just happened.
I think in the introductory slide, there was a what I understood, there was a definition of saying what BIPOC stood for.
Right. But
the acronym. Are
we saying that we don't want to use BIPOC because we're including Black and Indigenous and people of color? That's what BIPOC stands for. So I just really want to make sure that we're not saying that we don't want to use or we don't want Human Services to use the term BIPOC. Like,
it was the second part of it, Angela.
What second
part? It wasn't the term BIPOC. I don't have the slide, so
it was the definition of the
it was,
and I got it off of like Webster Dictionary. So
yeah, it was after.
It is. It was the really pulling out what the B and the I stand for, the Black.
Okay, because I'm gonna say just in general, just looking at the slides and seeing what the commission has like requested and what has been funded, it's covering, you know, Black, Indigenous, people of color, Chinese, Japanese. So I'm just like, I think that maybe this might just be like a confusion of a definition and not something that people are saying we go by, we stand. I don't know. I'm just so confused. Like,
it's not about the BIPOC. Is the last sentence that came, and again at some point maybe Christy can send this to us so we can revisit it so we don't take too much time here, but it's not about doing away with BIPOC. It's the last sentence that says the Black and Indigenous communities have been impacted by whatever it was. I don't recall exactly. And what I'm saying is that because in the definition we also have people of color, so it only makes sense to include them in the last sentence that says they have negatively been impacted as well.
Oh, right. And that, I would just go back to what Leslie said, is like, this isn't like the oppression Olympics. Like, we all know that everyone has suffered. So I think...
Yeah, but it's important to call it out. If we don't call it out, we forget. So language and words do matter, at least to me. That's my opinion.
Okay.
So it's not a competition for who was oppressed first, but acknowledging that there are other people who also have experienced oppression.
But then what are you expecting to change, since it was just like a definition that Chrissy just like put up there for reference?
It's just the last sentence of it. I said, why is that? That was my question.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
So I think in application, I hear you, Commissioner Phan, you're correct. The data analysis included communities represented by the entire term of BIPOC. And so I think part of what I'm hearing your question is, so what are we agreeing to? I think we didn't agree to any different analysis or inclusion of different groups because I believe we did. Please feel free to correct us if we need feedback as staff, but we did include all people of color in those groups. I think the definition that we provided attempted to explain why it is Black, Indigenous people of color, and perhaps did not do so in the most effective way and caused confusion, is what I understood that conversation to help us understand.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other comments?
I think one other thing I just didn't say during the presentation, but we did have, if you're looking at the data, we did have a lot more BIPOC agencies apply for funding, looking at our 2020 versus our 2021-22. And I can say just with my conversations with small organizations, I expect that number to be even larger this coming year. So I think the outreach we're doing in the community and the getting the word out about funding is helping. And so smaller agencies that haven't applied for funding in the past are beginning to. And I think that's really exciting.
Thank you, Christy. Our next presenter, our special presenter this evening, it looks like she's here, is, apologies if I'm pronouncing your name incorrectly, Sarah Levin, is that correct? Levin? Got it. Got it.
Levin,
more.
Yes.
Levin,
you.
Great. Very nice to meet you. United Way of King County's Vice President for Community Services. Good evening, Sarah. And Sarah will share their organization's experience both with shifting funding investment areas and prioritizing the work of BIPOC organizations.
Great. So I will jump right in. I also have a PowerPoint. It's 4 slides, and I will share my screen in just a second. But I wanted to first say a big thank you for inviting me. And I think what I'm going to say, which is mostly narrative focused, will be a really good complement to all the great data that Christy shared. So hopefully with her presentation and what I'm going to say, it's sort of one comprehensive conversation. I want to say thank you to all the commissioners for your service. You're here on a Tuesday evening, other duties is assigned after work. I know how important the role is that you play in helping the City of Bellevue make funding decisions. So again, just really thank you for your service and thank you for inviting me. And as the chair said, I am the Vice President for Community Services at United Way of King County. Been there for about 9 years. Leslie has been a longtime volunteer, a member of our community building committee, and a member of our racial equity subcommittee. So back when she was at the City of Kirkland, we have had the opportunity for several years to learn from her, and hopefully she's learned from us as she's helped shape how United Way investments have changed. And I am going to try to do the magical thing of sharing my screen. And I'm on a laptop with just one monitor, so I will probably not be able to easily read the chat if you put anything in the chat, but what I will do is get through my slides, and then I'm happy to answer questions or look at chat and answer then. And let me see if I can do a slideshow here. So what I wanted to do first is lots of folks have heard the name United Way. Many of you may have engaged with us at one point or another. You may have been a donor, a volunteer, or you may have been involved in an agency that was funded by United Way. United Way as a whole, and United Way of King County in particular, has undergone an enormous amount of change in the last couple of decades, and then significantly in the last few years. And when you think of United Way, you might think of an organization with a pretty broad mission. We do broad human, we, in our sort of inception, did broad human service investments, funded wide range of things from youth programs to senior centers to education services, domestic violence programs, homelessness, all sort of the wide range of the ways of organizations that help folks in need in our community. United Way of King County has its own mission, its own set of priorities. We use branding from the United Way worldwide, which is our sort of parent organization, but we operate really individually based on the needs of our particular community. For many, many, many years, workplace giving was a significant portion of our revenue. So I'm going to talk a little bit both about money and about impact, because those things are tied together in a way, and as they were in the slides that Christy shared. Workplace giving is when, you know, a United Way rep would show up in your office and do a little pitch for money, and you would do a payroll deduction and donate to social services or really any nonprofit in the community. We focused forever on sort of big numbers of people served. We would report out on having had a part in a million different food bank services being, or visits being funded, or tens of thousands of shelter nights, and United Way money would be a piece of those really large numbers and really large impact. We talked about breadth, not necessarily depth. And, you know, for decades, we've been really proud of the impact that we've had, and many, many people, individuals in our community and agencies of all types, of all kinds of nonprofits in King County have benefited. And I would say for at least the last 15 years or longer, we have used a racial equity lens in how we report our demographics, in thinking about who is impacted by the issues that the nonprofits we funded, who is impacted by those issues that the nonprofits were trying to address. So racial equity in different words over the years, and I will also use the term BIPOC in a couple minutes, but racial equity, diversity, equity, inclusion, sort of as the terminology changes and as the thinking changes, we've been right there along with it. We began an evolution several years ago, but in particular with a 2015 strategic plan that United Way was doing. And we were trying to do a couple of different things. First of all, we recognized that the model that United Way used to raise money, that workplace campaign, really wasn't as relevant in the current day and age. In the current day, any of us can go online and find a nonprofit and make a donation online. Companies are less interested in having a United Way rep come in and solely pitch, you know, donating through United Way. Companies wanted more opportunities for their employees to learn about the challenges and make their own decisions about how to donate money. As our money revenue sources were changing, we recognized that it just wasn't sustainable for United Way to continue to be a broad human services funder, that we neither had the type of money coming in that would allow us to do that, and the folks who are our donors, and that includes high wealth individuals, it includes non-high wealth individuals, it includes companies and government funders, were asking us what kinds of results we were achieving and seeing in our investments, in our grants, and asking us to focus. So in our 2015 strategic plan, we really focused in on three main areas: ending homelessness, addressing or breaking the cycle of poverty, and education, access to equal access to education. And we recognized that as we were focusing in and looking at the data of who was impacted by homelessness, poverty, and education inequity, we had to be far more crystal clear on the disparities, because who was being impacted by those challenges in our community were primarily or disproportionately people of color. So we really ended up focusing in our dollars, our public policy and how we were using our voice or our influence. United Way has a megaphone in many cases and a board and a wide group of volunteers that can really do advocacy and influence. And we were using our opportunity to leverage public and private dollars in a far more focused way for those kind of three areas that I mentioned. So all of that is in part because of the change in funding and how United Way was raising money, but also in the change in recognizing community need and really wanting to say, if we want to move the needle on homelessness, move the needle on poverty or education, we have got to dedicate more dollars and more strategies to those who are most impacted, again, by homelessness, poverty, and education inequity, and we've got to go deeper in focusing on racial equity. Not just who is served, not just ensuring that communities of color and the nonprofits in those communities are receiving funding, but also how. How are those organizations serving communities of color, and are they doing it in a way that reflects the culture and language and experiences of those communities of color? So at the time, sort of between 2015 and 2017 or so, United Way made some major funding changes where we were no longer supporting broadly programs that served older adults, broad sort of general, really wonderful, really, really good strategies, but broad investments like senior centers, investments like domestic violence, unless it was tied to a domestic violence shelter. Broad-based youth programs that were, you know, a drop-in program for a young person after school. And we also stopped reduced and then stopped our investment in homeless shelter. And that may be another story for another time. But the result of that is that we had a lot of people mad at us because we were changing our funding. We also were specifically doing funding opportunities in homelessness, poverty, and education that put a high priority on organizations. You all described them as by for organizations. We have a specific definition, our own definition, which aligns with by for of BIPOC community agency. So all of a sudden we had, wonderful organizations that had long time been partners of United Way, the Boys and Girls Club, like I said, senior centers, the Boys and Girls Club, and I just drew a total blank, but imagine sort of the sort of large organizations that serve lots and lots of young people or lots and lots of older adults or provide kind of general services for folks in need. Those organizations became less competitive for United Way funding because we were talking about wanting to lead with organizations that were rooted in communities of color, could address the needs of communities of color in a culturally appropriate way, and met our definition of BIPOC organization. And so again, over the course of a few years, who United Way traditionally funded changed a lot, and it changed because we were becoming laser focused on addressing the greatest disparities, looking at the data, and looking at the best solutions to address disparities, and recognizing that culturally focused organizations, our definition of BIPOC organization, would have the best results for those families and individuals and youth experiencing those needs. So today, we continue to evolve. We have a strategic roadmap. It's our new strategic plan that updates the 2015 plan and goes incredibly deep, particularly for United Way, on racial equity. And we talk about a mission to bring the community together to support our neighbors and work toward racial justice by transforming inequitable systems. We have a really focused set of strategies in that strategic plan that accompany both investing in BIPOC organizations along with doing deliberate systems change work, knowing that you're never going to address racial inequities or racial justice without changing the systems that cause it. And we have what we call a racial equity theory of change that Leslie, in her volunteer role with us, has been really valuable, given us really valuable advice in developing that racial equity theory of change. So we have tracked, like with your data, we have tracked for the last few years the percent of funding that we've given allocated to BIPOC organizations, again, meeting our definition, which is similar to the BI4 definition. And I can't do two screens, so I can't pull up the actual data, but I think off the top of my head, it was about 17% of our funding in 2017, and we're now at 40%. We've made, again, deliberate changes to our funding processes and deliberately prioritized those organizations that work in the culture and language and community of those who are most disproportionately represented in homelessness, poverty, and education inequity. We have a goal that Leslie helped us set to get to 50% of our funding in 2 years, and we are confident we're going to get there. And if we get there sooner than 2 years, we're going to up the bar. We also have had the benefit of, particularly during COVID, but even before then, becoming a really powerful intermediary with government. And this goes back, you know, many years, but I'll give an example of a home visiting program called Parent Child Plus. And it is a national model that brings home visitors of the same language and culture as a family with a 2 or 3 year old. Brings that home visitor into the family's home twice a week for over 2 years and does work with both the caregiver and the child to help them prepare for kindergarten and be ready or prepare for preschool and then prepare for kindergarten. I could talk about that program all day long, but my point is we have 16 organizations, most of which, probably two-thirds of which, are BIPOC or BIPOC-focused organizations. And both the City of Seattle and King County have contributed significant levy funding to United Way, which we've then added our privately raised dollars to, and directed us to ensure that that BIPOC families are being served appropriately and that BIPOC organizations are being funding. So we've being funded. So we've been able to be an intermediary with government funding and quite frankly taken some of the heat off of government when they've had to make choices about funding by giving it to United Way and putting us in charge of the process with a charge to fund BIPOC organizations. We've been able to do that work. And again, one example being Parent Child Plus. Love and Liberation is a county-funded program that funds about 13 out-of-school time programs, all 100% culturally focused, delivering services in a way that works for the young people in their culture and language. And it includes El Centro de la Raza, it includes Red Eagle Storing, which works with Native youth. It includes Lover Empowerment Mentoring. It includes eight or so other really, really powerful organizations working with young people. And then other ways in which we've received significant government funding is rent assistance, and most recently King County allocated to us a significant amount of funding, COVID-related funding to allocate to entities to ensure that those who are suffering from food insecurity right now have access to culturally appropriate food. So I say all of that to say, we're doing a lot, we're measuring it, we're holding ourselves to a commitment to funding BIPOC organizations by that definition, and that systems change is a really critical piece of that, and we're still evolving. And then my last slide is just, we've had a ton of lessons learned, and just hearing your conversation and sort of knowing the context in which you all work as stewards of public funds, with a wide range of constituents. You know, United Way also has a wide range of constituents, and we've certainly, you know, made many constituents unhappy with some of our decisions. And that comes with the territory, and it comes with the territory when you're making a bold, equity-focused, racial equity-focused stand. And we do it backed by data. We do it backed by sort of a moral imperative, recognizing who is most disproportionately represented in those who are experiencing homelessness, poverty, and education inequity. And we stand by the changes that we've made. A lesson learned was being more clear, needing to be more clear about why we were changing. Folks were initially confused about, well, is it driven by money, or is it driven by wanting to focus, or is it driven by wanting to invest in BIPOC organizations? And we didn't always have sort of our story straight, even though we knew what our story was, we weren't always as good at conveying it. We also learned that, you know, as much as possible, give a lot of notice to existing grantees. So if we were making a change via an RFP and that RFP was all of a sudden going to be really focused in on prioritizing BIPOC community organizations and those broader groups doing great work that were longtime partners wouldn't be as competitive for that funding, we tried to give a lot of notice, because a United Way funding change often has a ripple effect on other on an organization's flexibility and ability to fund their programs. Again, wanting to just stand by the changes that we've made and know that we still have more work to do, shifting that focus back to what the impact is and the data about who the disparities are impacting. And I think as we were changing as well, we tried to, if we were, you know, talking to an agency that was no longer going to be eligible for our funding because of the focus on racial equity, we tried to find other forms of engagement for that organization and say, hey, you're not eligible for the funding that we have, but join our volunteer engagement portfolio, and we'll help you get volunteers for your projects, or you can be part of Day of Caring or part of other ways that we engage volunteers. Honestly, we're shifting our volunteer funding to be more community-centric and BIPOC-focused now as well, so we don't have a lot of that other those other opportunities to offer to more mainstream organizations, and we want to see them succeed. So we will never turn down a conversation with or the opportunity to make a connection with an organization that may have been at one time funded by United Way, because we recognize that we have a lot of amazing nonprofits in the community, and we want them to be successful, all of them. And then finally, you know, we celebrate every day that we have this incredible portfolio of BIPOC community organizations, grassroots organizations that in the prior iteration of United Way just never would have been on our radar or been funded or been part of the way we do business. And the portfolio of BIPOC community groups is growing, and we see the impact, we see the change in our partnerships and relationships, and we celebrate it. And we celebrate that we are able to, and we're able to really change how we do business to focus deeper on racial inequities, racial justice, and that it is critical. If we are going to have an equitable economic recovery in this community post-COVID, we have got to focus, at least in the United Way, and I would certainly challenge all of you and challenge other government partners, we've got to focus on those most disproportionately impacted. So I'm going to stop sharing my screen if I can. Let's see. Hang on a second. And I'm happy to either stop talking or answer questions or let you get on to your next topic.
Right. Thank you so much, Sarah. Really appreciate the presentation. Any questions from the commission or staff? Sounds like no. Thank you so much, then, for your presentation. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. Fantastic. Our next item, Leslie, looks like you'll be providing some information to support our planning for the upcoming funding process.
Make sure I unmute myself. I have to get used to, we use Teams most of the time, so yeah. Okay, are you all seeing a nod? Thank you for the nods, I appreciate it. Okay, so I know that I'm walking partway into your conversations about planning for the upcoming funding process, but I am gonna try to be sensitive as possible to, it sounds like Commissioner Phan, you haven't been on for a long time, and I know Commissioner Singh, this is his first meeting, so hopefully I'll be able to share the information in a way that is useful. For those of you that this is repetitive, my apologies, but I just first wanted to go through the funding process timeline. So the application portal for agencies opened on March 14th, and we had on March 15th and 16th, there were virtual staff provided kind of a walkthrough of the application and application process, and so we offered that. So April and May, you as the commission and staff supporting you, of course, are preparing for this review process and centering equity as we enter. We wait for April 28th when the application, and that's supposed to say portal, not proposal, closes. May through July, we will review applications, and the commission will be formulating draft recommendations during that time. I understand that at Bellevue, you have a recess in August, so we will take a break. And then in September, there'll be a public hearing to receive comments from the community on the draft recommendations. And then in the late fall, there'll be an opportunity for Chair Piper to present the recommendations of the commission to the council. Any questions here? Okay. So traditionally, and at the March 1st meeting, you all agreed again to meet in teams to review and discuss applications in certain focus areas. And we don't have those assignments yet because we just don't know how many applications we'll get in different areas. So we'll be assigning that once all the applications are in. but we're proposing that Jude and Tim work together, Angela, Ben, and Jimmy, and then Samira and Ted work on teams. The next topic we have is talking about kind of funding sustainable agency operations. I know that you heard about this with the needs update and probably from agencies themselves maybe over the last year or so of how many challenges they're having with staffing and the need to some agencies have been successful at raising salaries. Others are really hindered by the funding that they are receiving at this time. And so just kind of the highlighting that expectation that we're going to see some of those costs in this application and that we'll be expecting that it will cost more. So a bed night will cost more, an hour of mental health counseling and such. Those will all be more expensive. The other thing we wanted to highlight was the cost of administration. And this is a line oftentimes that we see that is not the exciting program where you have direct service, but we know that in order for an agency to do its work, that they have to have administrative costs and that those need to be funded in order for them to provide the programming that we're excited that the community is able to engage. And so just want to highlight that we want to be supportive of those, and also recognize that there's also a connection to equity, that we sometimes agencies don't know if about being able to provide and ask for funding for administration. They're fearful that they will be penalized for asking for those supports. And so we have a staff recommendation for the commission to consider letting agencies know now that the commission is welcome to request for awards that are up to 20% of administration costs. So I'm just going to stop sharing for a moment so Chair Piper can lead a conversation about that staff recommendation.
Thank you, Leslie. I guess my first question, and again, it's been 2 years, so I'm trying, and I know that certainly came up and it was a matter of discussion in previous funding cycles in terms of direct service versus administration costs. Is there a benchmark or anything that you can provide us in terms of what either Kirkland has done in the past, or maybe, I don't know, the staff knows, what sort of, have we looked at this on a percentage basis? 20%, I'll just tell you off the cuff, seems a bit high, but I'm also cognizant of the fact that a lot has changed in 2 years. So costs have gone up, but I just wanted to kind of get a reading on, is there a benchmark, is there a norm here that we can kind of compare it to?
I would say that 20% is a recognition of a kind of a norm. There are, funders do have different amounts that they will say outright, and but 20% is within that, and I think it is ensuring sustainable operations for agencies. So I can certainly make a note about following up with data, but this is a kind of a recognized amount of money that is reasonable and will support those services. Tony, did you have something that you might want to add to that?
I think you all know that my background is working in nonprofits, and Leslie has that background, and so does Christy, and so does Commissioner Merfitz. But 20% is something I'm quite familiar with in the nonprofit arena, that funders would, and the advantage of, I know we have funded administrative costs before, the advantage of determining ahead of time where our guide is one, to let agencies know, as Leslie said, that they can request it, but two, so our bias doesn't show up, and intentionally, of course, in the conversation of, oh, wait, this one didn't request that amount. And when that happens, it can cause small agencies to not be able to be as eligible for funding because they have to get administrative costs or they just can't even operate.
Thank you for that clarification. Yeah. Any other commissioners have comments or questions, clarifications?
And one thing I would just add is I've seen the challenges of small agencies to be able to keep being funded because they didn't ask for those funds and they're really struggling. At least with my experience at Kirkland was a couple of agencies really struggling to be able to meet the requirements of the contracts because they didn't have that investment in that administrative side. So I would add that detail.
And staff, just to clarify, are we voting on this tonight or what's the commission?
Whoops, sorry. I didn't mean to start. If I started sharing my screen again.
Oh, you haven't yet.
Oh, good. Okay. It just popped up on my screen. Wondering what makes sense for this. Is there a consensus or does a vote feel best for this? And how are...
I think we are looking for an answer in whatever form you want
all
to
right.
formulate it. Yes.
Okay. I understand, Leslie, that there are three recommendations. Is that right? Total? Three staff recommendations? Maybe we could listen to the full presentation in case there's any connection to them. Or are they,
Chair Piper, there's a hand raised, so I just want to make sure that you're noticing that.
Oh, please. Samira, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I just have a comment. I think, at least when I was writing grants and getting funding, the governments, they usually allot up to 10% for admin. And for me, I look at the reserves of an organization and the size of an organization. So if they have multiple grants, and they can allocate the cost of admin to different grants, then their admin cost is covered. It's a little bit more tricky, as you mentioned, Leslie, that, for the smaller organizations, because they don't have a lot of funding and different grants, it becomes more necessary to give them more money for admin. So I think perhaps it can be left at our discretion and giving a range. At least that makes more sense to me. I agree with Chair Piper that I find 20% just across the board is too high. Because some agencies do have healthy reserves and do have multiple grants that they can allocate their admin costs to those grants. I hope that makes sense.
Thank you. Any other commissioners have opinions on this?
I think we stick to the 20%. I would think that the agencies that have reserves or are getting other grants wouldn't ask for 20% of their administrative costs from this fund.
I would just add that when it comes to reserves, my understanding and experience of reserves is that those are there for emergency purposes. And so I actually think this would speak to the problem of not funding administration is that you are threatening the long-term stability of an agency if they're draining their reserves for just regular ongoing operations. So that might just be another way of thinking about it.
Yeah, but some agencies have more than 6 months of their operating budget in their reserves. Some do, some don't, but I have seen some of them that have quite a bit of money and that goes over the 6 months customary operating budget coverage. So that's what I was referring to.
Great. I appreciate that. Thank you. I appreciate your expertise.
With Samira's comment, I understand that what we want to do is to let applicants know to not be hesitant to include administrative costs. Do we feel that we're required to provide a percentage, or can we just tell them in principle it's not something that agencies are not going to be penalized for requesting this for to cover administrative costs? or do we, does staff think that we really do need to provide an actual guideline there in terms of what an appropriate percentage would be?
I think that for some, particularly again, if we're talking about those smaller agencies, giving a percentage would be kind of in essence permission to do so and not be worried about a decision. Again, I would just look to see Christy and Tony if you have something to add to that.
I agree that's the benefit of doing it and the reason we were suggesting it. I also hear the other valid input that's being shared. So, you know, I think there's a range of options of making sure that we just let agencies know that they can. But, you know, much like other places that there are inequity in processes, if you're from a historically marginalized group, you're less likely to negotiate a job offer. You're most, you know, you're just less likely to feel like you have the power to advocate for yourself in that way. And small agencies can at times be quite fearful or just uninformed of their ability to do those things. And that is why we were thinking of it as we were thinking through the kind of adopted funding priorities that the commission adopted at their March 1st meeting. One of them that was raised was the challenges of agencies to cover their costs due to their rising costs, the need for increases in staff pay in order to retain staff. So this was a strategy to kind of be two-pronged, both for those small emerging culturally linguistically specific agencies that may be new to our table, in addition to helping agencies that have faced funding deficits during the pandemic.
I'm wondering if there's something that we can do in the language to kind of strike a balance here where we can give this range without necessarily, because I think Samira makes a very good point. I mean, we're talking about different agencies, and if it's a smaller, you know, smaller agency who might not feel comfortable or would might want to have this or permission to do so, I certainly want them to not feel that they're going to be penalized. But at the same time, I don't want to give carte blanche necessarily to every organization to feel, well, if it's 20%, then that's going to be, I mean, I think if we give that, most agencies are they not just going to say, okay, well, we'll just have it 20% of admin costs. So could we maybe say we invite applicants to, you know, include administrative costs as necessary or, you know, as applicable, a range, I don't know, and maybe we provide a range or something, or up to 20%. I know it's semantics, but I'm just wondering if there's a compromise or there's a balance we can strike here.
I agree with the Ben. It's up to 20% gives a...
I have a question. Because they're asking for it, do you have to give it to them? So if you're because this will be my first funding cycle, and if they put in there that they want 20% administration costs, but you know that they're a larger agency, do you have to give them the 20% that they've asked for? So you're worried about them asking for the 20%, but you don't have to fund it for them if you know otherwise.
That's a good point. I mean, I don't know that we can necessarily, can we earmark that funding, right?
Well, you can negotiate with an agency of how much we will pay for a service unit. Okay. So that is negotiable.
All right.
So what they are doing in their application is that they're creating they're proposing what they'd like to do and what they would like to be funded. And then we come back, this kind of conversation, then the commission will come back and say, we would, you know, we're able to provide this amount of money to provide this amount of, you know, services. And then there would be response back from agents.
One reality is where we are in the funding process is that funding applications are due at the end of this month. So a lot of agencies have already done this and are well on their way to writing their application. So I don't know if even if we put this message out, if every agency is going to be like, oh, yeah. But I think it is really an important thing for as a commission to determine kind of where you're comfortable and like how you want to support the capacity of the organizations.
I mean, I guess, and this is my opinion here, is I'm okay. I think I want to look at this on an agency by agency basis. And I think in principle, I'm okay with the notion that 20% would be our cap. But I also want us to have, you know, the wherewithal if we want to, and I think we can, is to consider larger agencies and say, you know what, that's probably a little bit too high given these reserves. So I don't know exactly how that translates into the messaging to agencies. And maybe it's just an up to or giving some guidance, you know. But I guess as long as we still have that latitude, you know, in the funding cycle, I'm okay with it. Anyone else have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. Is there a consensus that makes what Chair Piper is suggesting makes sense?
I like it.
Okay. Do we have more than anyone
Jimmy,
else?
Jimmy, did I hear you say you would?
Commissioner Singh also affirmed that. Yes.
Okay.
And I believe,
yes. I believe in Mr.
And I believe Commissioner Mirfez as well. So I just think we maybe haven't heard from Commissioner Manson.
I agree too. I'm fine with
it. So it sounds like we do have consensus on that.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
All right.
I will share my screen again. Okay. Our next topic is just talking again about distributing funds equitably, and this is just, you'll recognize this slide from Christy's presentation, looking at during the pandemic and with 1590 funding, there was an increase in the average percent funded of an agency request for BIPOC buy-in-for agencies. And then I am going to turn it over to Tony to talk about the process and the recommendation we have in this area.
Great, thank you. So I referenced it in a comment in that last section, but again, we adopted some funding priorities at the March 1st meeting. And so Commissioner Singh, those are directly out of the Human Services Needs Update. They are the overview chapter. In addition, and we can get you the March 1st meeting minutes, but the other two areas identified by commissioners to take into consideration as a priority is goal 5 as a whole, and we'll explain more about how our goal areas are formed. But also alternative forms of behavioral health services. Commissioner Ma was specifically interested in group coaching. And so keeping in mind that behavioral health can be delivered in more than one format. But those were the adopted funding priorities, one of which was that there is insufficient access to services because for certain groups in our community, and specifically naming that we need more culturally and linguistically specific services, something I know we've touched on a lot this evening. So historically, and some of you have done this so many more times than me, so please feel free to chime in and correct me if I'm not representing this accurately, but we've kind of done a system of three rounds of review. And so the first, you know, the applications will be assigned out to those commissioner pairings that Leslie shared earlier. And those individuals will go try to become somewhat more experts on those applications, while all commissioners are asked to give so much more time than you already do and read all of the applications. And so everybody reads them all, but you will be assigned a few to try to delve in a little more deeply. In the first round, those commissioner pairings just present an overview. And they, the conclusion that's drawn in that first round is just, is there any concern that would mean that we would not be able to fund this application at all? So it's more of a yes-no conversation in that first round. The second round is where we start to put some numbers out there, and they're very rough. As you've all heard, many of you have experienced, we always get requests that far exceed allowable dollars. And as we've shared before, right now we have approximately $14 million, I believe, contracts in the community. And we will, because of all the added funding resources that are not on the table right now. So when we come to the table to review applications, we will have a little over $5 million to allocate. So that's, you know, forcing a lot into a small container. So that second round, we start to put numbers out there. And this is the round that we really wanted to talk with you a bit about. And please, past commissioners, chime in if you're remembering anything differently. But one of the approaches that has been taken is if an Agency A applies, and we have historically funded Agency A, and we want to fund them again, the kind of in pencil number, the temporary number that's jotted down is frequently, what were they funded last time? Let's just put that number down again. Let's hold that spot for that return amount. Or perhaps even let's hold that spot and let's give it a COLA increase. And so it holds that spot. And while that can be shifted by all means, it's a number and scratch, what that does is then create a smaller and smaller and smaller pool for any new agencies coming to the table. And as our community diversifies and responds to the needs within their own communities, we continue to see new providers come forward and say, I need to offer this service to be responsive to my community. And the pool is so, so small once we kind of refund at that full mark. And so we've been trying to brainstorm strategies, and the one that we're putting forward for your conversation this evening is that perhaps we don't start that round two with a reference to a prior funding number. Perhaps it's not considered that this is how much they've been funded before, and everybody has to come to the table on a level playing field of scratch. The only exception we would make and want to clarify as we talk about this that we do not intend that recommendation to be applied to is shelters. Shelters are considered critical infrastructure in the city. The city has funded their development and is committed to maintaining it. So council has to approve any recommendation. So I am not trying to speak for council, but a decline in shelter funding would not be advised by staff at this time. We can definitely say that. And so we're not intending that for shelters, but for all the other agencies, we're suggesting that we not start with that marker of, well, how much were they funded before, that we instead just look at all agencies across the board. And so I will pause there. Turn it over to Chair Piper. Do you want to still have conversation, Chair Piper, for each of
you? Yeah, we can do that. That's fine.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, I mean, well, let me open it up so I'm not being the first to speak on each of these. Do any other commissioners have initial thoughts?
I like the idea of a level playing field. I really do.
I do too. This is it's something that bothered me in the last funding cycle. In that it kind of limits what we are able to offer to new agencies or new ideas or emerging needs. And having that number on paper as a historical reference is counterproductive, I think.
So I agree to the same.
Samira, any thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I just think if we need to look at the capacity of the smaller organizations too. I think that's one thing that I'm concerned with, because as I mentioned, you know, larger agencies also serve our ethnic communities. So I think it's going to be case by case.
Yeah.
And also measuring the impact. I think that's, at the end of the day, that's what you're after, right? The so what with question. What has changed because of the services? And whom are they serving? And to that end, I think they can give us a better demographic, because everything is subsumed under other categories. So I don't know if you can, if it's possible to ask a better demographic in terms of whom they serve, and not lump everything together. I think that would give us a clear picture in terms of who is being served and who is not. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Marifez. I think what we're suggesting, we agree with what you're saying, of each agency should be considered on an individual basis, not a generalized practice of carry something forward. I think that we're saying the same thing. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But can you clarify for me what you are looking for as far as further on the demographics? Just help me understand that a little bit more.
Right, sure, absolutely. So for example, when they say we serve this many Black people, right? So how many of them are African Americans? How many of them are Africans, right?
Yeah.
And you know, for example, if they serve, they say we serve Caucasians. How many of them, for example, are from Eastern Europe, say Ukraine or Russia, and so on and so forth? Because we do have a large population. I think those demographics give us a better understanding in terms of the need in our community and who is being served.
Excellent feedback. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, and I don't mean to dominate the table. I just was speaking last, so for some reason I've kept talking, but I can definitely turn it back over to Leslie and Christy. But because the application already went out and it's a shared application amongst the cities, those demographic requests have already been issued. That is definitely something that the staff can kind of flesh out what that would look like, and then talk about that with the other cities that we use a shared application for, which is shared across, somebody here can cite the number, not me, but Northeast, thank you, Northeast and South cities all use the same application. But I do think that is very good feedback, Commissioner Nurkis.
And it's possible to do a follow-up questions after the submit their application. Should we have any questions?
We've done that on kind of an iterative basis. We haven't done a blanket, we have supplemental questions, can everybody please respond? But you all have definitely, as we've, especially I think after we've gone through that first review, have raised, hey, this would help us flesh this out a little more. Could you get some clarity from agencies? And we've definitely done that before for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Excellent feedback.
Can I add just a little bit to that? First of all, I just want to say music to my ears in terms for Samara in terms of that disaggregated data and how important that is. That is something actually I've been raising with other cities about we don't have any data about with outcomes that are disaggregated. And so we have begun those conversations. The biggest challenge is, as Tony mentioned, was sharing. We share a demographics form, and so we haven't asked them for that material. So that would be the other challenge, would just be what's the capacity for them to be able to ask for, to get that information if they don't have any grantors asking those questions. But I really appreciate you raising it.
Great. It sounds like we have a consensus then. For the staff's recommendation. Bring on the next one.
You're muted, Leslie.
Thank you, Christy. Sorry about that. So this last area is talking about ensuring that your priority areas, which were identified in the needs update, are funded. And so the way that this shared funding process works with all the cities is that we, you know, put out a request for agencies to submit applications for that for which they provide the community and which they have identified as important. And but that doesn't necessarily mean that applications will meet that need. What we are suggesting, and I have some of my raw notes in here, sorry about that, after you've reviewed all of the applications, to maybe take a moment to wonder what is missing and if there are not have some of the applications meet the needs that you have identified through the needs update, that perhaps you set aside funding for future RFPs. You did this the last time with Spanish-speaking cultural navigation services, and so you set funds aside and did a separate RFP to get that service offered in the community. An example of something that was identified in our diversity advantage plan was to offer equity training for agencies to increase their capacity to serve our diverse community. So that might be a set aside if no one is asking for those funds. So this is our third and final recommendation, is to ask what's missing and not just consider what has been applied for.
And just to thank you for that, and just to clarify, because I know that something similar has come up in the past two funding cycles where, you know, I recall as we go through the rounds, we'll say, okay, and if we had additional funds, we would earmark it for XYZ. Is that, it may be
a little different.
A little different here? Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is, if something in the ask,
this
not
would, so there's not an ask. So it would actually be, you might, I'll give you an example from Kirkland, if I may.
Sure.
We, a couple of cycles ago, we had a very persuasive presentation about the need for increased civil legal aid for the community. But when we got the applications, there were no proposals that really, aimed to address that significant need. And so the commission recommended to City Council to set aside $100,000 for an RFP to address civil legal aid with an emphasis on housing stability. So what they actually did was there were applications that asked for funds that they said, if you have additional funding, we'd like to do this, but we're actually going to prioritize something that wasn't even asked for. And so we're prioritizing the RFP over some of these other applications.
Got it.
And Chair Piper, as Leslie mentioned, we did do this 2 years ago. So this is just a concept for putting back on your radar and perhaps in a bit of a broader form.
Yeah.
When we reviewed the applications last time, we realized we were missing something we had had before. We had previously received applications for a Spanish-speaking cultural navigator, and that was a gap. And we really felt like that was a significant miss for the community. And so the commission did do that. And so we're saying, let's just remember that and consider it in perhaps an even broader way than just, wait, we got it before, we didn't this time. But as we're hearing about these growing gaps in the community, also stop and say, and is there just something that we know needs to happen that we just have not seen applications for?
Thank you for that clarification. Any initial comments from the commission? Yay, nay? Do we think it makes sense to?
I like it.
Okay.
I like it too.
All right. Okay.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree too.
All right. We've got consensus on that one as well.
Great job.
All right. A model of efficiency. All right. And I think that was the last item, the information for the commission. Any old business? Staff? No? Any new business? Oh, go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say that one thing I just wanted to catch, Tony had mentioned getting the minutes of the March meetings to Commissioner Singh, and we Christy printed those out and included that in his, with his booklet today. So we were a step ahead of you, Tony. So
of course you awesome people did that.
So he can, so I would just say what I would say is old business is still going to stay with us. So appreciate Commissioner Singh taking that time to read those minutes.
Yes, I have read the, I got it, but I'll read it tonight. Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you. Yeah.
Did not expect you to read it before this meeting.
There's no quiz tonight, I promise.
Expected it as homework over the next month.
Okay.
All right.
I just wanted to ask if there were any questions about the equity training or if everyone feels like they have what they need for Thursday night at 6:30.
I think I just got the email. I have to go through it.
Yeah. Christy was going to make sure that you got that information.
If people aren't able to attend, if you can please let us know, we will look at kind of who's there to make sure that we can forward the recorded version on to you, because they will be recording that one. And then I will also, just because I know we're all busy, and since these are not going to be, the trainings are not on all of our typical commission nights, I will, a few days before the training that you signed up, just send you a reminder email. Just, hey, look at your email, look at your Outlook calendar, but just a reminder that you signed up for this training.
Thank you. And I guess that's kind of new business. Any other new business? All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved. So made, I say.
Second?
Ted Mansfield, second.
All right. We are adjourned.
Bye.
And so we'll, all right. Thank you so much, everyone. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.